Every episode of The Gauge is brought to you by Bill Fick Ford and the WCRA. Guys, Bill Fick Ford is the number one Super Duty dealer in the country for the fourth year in a row. You guys have heard me rant and rave about Bill Fick Ford for the absolute best buying experience in the car industry, truck industry. Bill Fick Ford's the place to go. I bet you remember the old ad where I said I was getting a new Super Duty. Well, here's the keys for that. Bill Fick Ford delivers, guys. Noble discounts, noble interest rates, the best buying experience you can get. And if you are not local to Huntsville or the Houston area, he'll deliver it to you just like he did to me. Bill Fick Ford. Rodeo Corpus Christi has nearly tripled its added prize money from 2019 and will be one of the largest payout rodeos this summer. That's $545,000 with no entry fees. Rodeo Corpus Christi will be the first stop of WCRA's Triple Crown of Rodeo. The only way to qualify for the Rodeo Corpus Christi is by nominating your rides and runs with the WCRA. You can win $1 million by nominating your rides and runs and earning points with the WCRA. Through the Triple Crown of Rodeo, the WCRA will award this $1 million cash prize to any one athlete or collective of athletes who win first place at any three consecutive WCRA major rodeos. A common misconception with the WCRA is that it is only for the pros. That's the farthest thing from the truth. It's designed for the underdogs to have their fair chance. If you feel like you have the ability to compete against the best in the world, but maybe you don't feel like it. Maybe you can't afford to go down the road for a full year. Maybe you got a job. Well, the WCRA is made for you. The WCRA has awarded more than $8.5 million to rodeo athletes in just a couple of years. To learn more, visit WCRARodeo.com and learn how you can earn a spot at Rodeo Corpus Christi and possibly be rodeo's next millionaire.
What sets Resist All apart is the legacy of the cowboys who wear the brand. These traditions are passed down from fathers to sons, from heroes to future champions. Since 1927, Resist All has been handcrafting the finest American-made cowboy hats. Generation after generation, we live it.
This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradu.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. This is The Gauge, and I am Chance Conradu. On this episode of the podcast, we have got Donna K. Rule. I really, really enjoyed talking to her. She's super inspirational. She says all the right things at all the right times, and Ty was crying his little butt off with how much inspiration Donna K. had to share with us. So check it out. This is a good one.
Our friend looks just like him. So
really?
We were telling him that he looks just like Tommy Trott, and it turns out we like Tommy Trott, so it's okay.
Oh, you found somebody who looks just like that running around.
Just like that.
You're kidding me.
Hair was a little different.
He didn't have some excited hair. It was more calm.
Yeah. He does a few different hairstyles. He had this little samurai ponytail thing when I first met him, when we hired him for the job.
It was a bold move.
It was. I guess you got picked on too much and you got rid of it.
Yeah.
Or was it just like it was time for a change? The trend was done.
It was a mix of maintenance for it was just a little too much.
It's not like rodeo. The trends in rodeo don't change. It's going to be cowboy hat, boot, and some form of a
plaid shirt
and jeans.
Yeah,
plaid. It's always going to be that way. But out there in the real world, it's an ocean.
Do it.
We're sheltered in our industry. Out there in the real world, or they're worried about masks and all those different things. They're living different.
Yeah, quite.
As you, of all people, know. Quite. You went through some very interesting things.
Did go through, yes, right. Yeah.
We were right there, not too far from you when all of it was going on, because we were in Globe Life. And I was really excited to talk to you to kind of hear right from the horse's mouth, if you will, that experience.
It was tough. It was tough. I had tested the week before, just at local level, just to be sure, so I wouldn't have anything to be afraid of. And so when I got there, you know, I was fearless, and they tested, and we sat there. We put our horses away and got our room and got our stuff in our room and came back and sat there, and there we were in the parking lot, and they gave me the call. And like I said on some other podcast they asked me about, I got invited to go home. So it was a little tough.
Yeah.
It was a little tough.
Yeah. How do they say that? Like, do they approach that like, hey, sorry, by the way, you can't be here? Or were they more tactful about it?
No, they were a little bit brisk about it. They were a little bit brisk about, we'll make arrangements to get your horses moved out of the stalls. And that was, I bristled a little bit on that, but, we had all signed those things. We knew it was a possibility. So, although I was disappointed, as you can imagine, I understood that that was the deal.
Yeah.
He was somewhat brisk. I think that he was, you know, honestly probably worried sick that he would have to tell somebody, and he was probably, you know, as sick as the rest of us.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, they invited me to go home.
Yeah.
So that was a little tough. I went and got Valor and Juice, and we had a place to stay, and I stayed overnight just to get the second test. And, you know, I guess we could have protested it. We could have done some stuff. But I think it would have really harmed some that were totally innocent. And I knew the PRCA and those that were in power had done everything they could just to have the thing.
Yeah.
And then I just told the people where we were at. I was like, oh, I'm just going to go home. What if I make someone sick here? So we went home to hear the second bad news.
Right.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And a very tough position, especially in a year like 2020 where, I mean, you had to work so hard just to get there. Gosh. And most of it was just blind, like hoping and praying. I mean, yeah. We've talked about it 1,000 times with 1,000 different people. But, I mean, it was a tough road. And I'd like to hear kind of your feedback on getting there. And then, you know, obviously.
And then the lovely news I had. Yeah, it was a tough year. I traveled by myself, me and Rosie the rodeo dog. And so we went a lot of miles in between. You know, you would leave one and drive 8 hours to the next one. And you know, where we typically like to hang out and go here and then 2 hours or an hour or whatever and have a day in between. We didn't have that, you know. So it was a lot. I went to North Dakota and South Dakota and had not been to some of those. So, but, you know, you got to give it to those committees that did all they could and, you know, did handstands to help us and have things.
Yeah, I mean, if you went to any rodeos, I mean, it was amazing how well these small communities rallied around these really small rodeos that most people aren't going to go to Iowa for, you know, some of these rodeos.
A rodeo, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was tremendous, you know, for that part of it. Some of the great ones that we love the hospitality and stuff. We got to meet a lot of nice people, and they all rallied around and wanted us there. So that was really neat.
Yeah. Yeah, the few that I went to that were in odd places, like Upper Montana and stuff, it was really interesting to see, like, just these small-town people that if you're from, like, this area, you're not used to that, right? You don't see how important, like, this little dinky rodeo that we're like, well, this isn't Fort Worth, this isn't San Antonio, how much effort they put into it.
So much.
It's unbelievable.
There were so many times we stopped for fuel and you know, the little place in town where everybody goes for coffee every morning, all those little low guys, you know, and they talk about cows, and then they'd come in, oh golly, you could barely get away from there because they wanted to know who you were and what you were doing, and people were lined up for fuel, and they just couldn't believe the activity in town. So that was pretty neat.
Yeah, yeah, that's the best part. If you spend, like, a meaningful amount of time in those little towns, you can go to those little cafes or whatever, and if you have a patch on your shirt or something, like, what are you doing here?
So, what are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah, what is this Kerr thing on your shirt? Lady, who are you? Where are you from? You're not from around here.
Yeah, you're not from here. That was always like, oh, golly, is that okay?
Yeah, but you made it through. You got the news that the NFR was happening. You got the news that you were going to be in there, and then, of course, you get here, go through the whole process, and that happens. But one of the things that I was really impressed with, and I think thousands of people were, is how tactfully you handled it. I mean, it was pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. You know, I did pray about it a lot. You know, I'm human. I mean, it was a sure enough kick in the gut, no doubt about it. But, you know, and we did look into it. I had a lot of wonderful people contact me and tell me, we want to help you, we want to do this. A lot of lawyers called me, and, you know, people were very, very kind. But once I realized who would take the brunt of it on the chin and who would be kicked in the teeth over it, it was nobody that was responsible for it. And I wasn't about to do that.
Right.
You know, rodeo is it feeds us. It feeds a lot of people. And they did all they could to put the dang thing on. I wasn't about to kick them in the teeth. You know, reality of it, yeah, probably cost me $100,000. But, you know, it's not about money all the time. Sometimes it's about morality.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is absolutely true. And one of the things that most people in rodeo talk about is that morality and God. And, you know, that's one of the pillars of our industry, right?
Yeah.
And there's a time where you can say all those things or you can be those things. And that's what I found to be really impressive about just the whole way you handled it. I mean, not everybody probably would have or could have. And we certainly saw how people handled certain things after the fact, you know, whether it be on your behalf or not. I mean, there was some ugly stuff. We were like, wow, get your popcorn. This is fun.
Yeah.
As an onlooker.
Yeah.
But it certainly wasn't fun for some of the people who were just doing what they needed to do. But yeah. I don't think I could ever tell you how impressive that was. And I think all of us were saying that. I mean, I was, my sister was, our whole family was like, wow, she is something for approaching it that way.
Well, thank you. I mean, there was some ugliness, you know, and I was worried about that. And I had heard some of the ugliness, you know, and we got to be good to each other. You know, I think it's goofy to hear we're all in this together because, you know, we all have our own agenda, but we do have to be good to each other, and you have to be kind, and you have to understand that it's not just about you. It's about us, really and truly.
Right. No, absolutely. And when you see like something like rodeo, if you look at the entire world, right, all the things are in the world, it's just this little speck, right?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't take a whole lot for powers that be to just shut that down. We've seen that. I mean, we've seen it with things bigger, right? And so that's one of the things that worries me is like, okay, sometimes people in rodeo forget that there's a whole world outside that's actually making the earth spin.
Mm-hmm.
And do you really think that our tiny little industry with us few thousand people in it are going to be able to have any huge impact on the world? Probably not. So we should probably open our eyes a little bit and be more protective.
Yeah, protective and kind. I mean, yep. It's important that they understand you should be kind. You know, at the risk of sounding evangelistic, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, but I, you know, we all need that spiritual push and to open up and understand that it's not about you, it's about us. And kindness is a big deal.
I agree. And, you know, if you look at some of the people, let's take, for instance, Corey Solomon and Jesse, for instance, right? The amount of flack that those guys got for just answering the phone and technically doing what they were supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
It was pretty crazy to see that. I didn't understand that, really. What did you think?
I had a problem with it.
Yeah.
I had a problem with them being ugly to Jesse, and that was probably the main reason I did the video. If you're 16th, you call.
Yep.
Anything can happen.
Yeah.
COVID or not.
Yep.
Sure, it upset some people. Donna Kay didn't get to go. Caleb didn't get to go. We were upset.
Yeah.
But the reality.
It was you guys.
Oh, yeah. My word. The reality of it, Jessie belonged there. She was 16th. Anybody who's 16th calls in and just in case.
Yep.
And in fact, I ran into Jessie at Odessa. We were all at the Slack and we were trying to figure out, you know, how long it'll be before the barrel started and blah, blah, blah. And there was a group of many of the barrel racers standing there. And Jesse turned the corner at the stairs and she and I hadn't talked. I mean, other than just I texted her a little bit and told her, go get them. You're fine. You know, I understand. It's just don't worry about me.
Right.
And here she walks around the corner and it was just like this moment where the crickets started going and we were all standing there and Jesse was looking at me, not sure what to say. And I just reached over and hugged her. Like, Jesse, I wish you'd had a better finals.
Yeah.
You did a great job. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because one of the things is okay, if 16 says no, who do you think's coming up next? 17. So on down the list.
You bet.
Somebody's going to have to say yes.
And if you're 16, 17, yeah. You're a fool if you don't call in. So good for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's mounted and can ride and, yeah, she belonged there.
Yeah. I mean, if you're 16's a spot where a lot of people have found themselves and it's a difference of very little.
Yeah, John's brother was 16 several times in the bull riding, you know, when they had that team rodeo concept, and he missed it like 3 times.
Right.
Not everybody could be on a team.
Right.
Richard missed it 3 times.
Yeah.
And could ride as good as anybody there.
Yeah, so. A lot of it's just luck of the draw, you know, especially when you're going to 60, 70 rodeos a year.
Yeah. So.
But, yeah, I mean, were you excited? So leaving the whole COVID positive test behind us. I mean, I know you said you felt great. You didn't really suffer from it all that much. What was it, just a little head cold for you? Or
nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely
completely
nothing.
Asymptomatic.
Asymptomatic. I never lost taste. I never lost smell. I just went on. I called a guy and said, yes, I'll take your 2 horses because I have no income means at this point. So right. Yeah, bring me those two horses, I'll ride them. And I just shut the whole thing off that was down here and just went back to work.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, yes, I was very excited to have a standard course. And, you know, we could set up a horse and send him in there and set him up and let him do his job where you didn't have to be in a 13-second pattern and just hope it worked.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and then did you watch the, or were you too, like, bummed out to watch the show?
I just shut it off.
Yeah, you have to probably,
I just did. And there was some, like I said, there were many people that texted me and messaged me, and they were kind, but I responded to nobody, and I never watched anything.
Yeah. That's probably the smart move, right? Yeah. So that you're able to kind of let yourself move on from it.
Move on.
If it's slapping you in the face, you're going to get bitter maybe, right?
Yeah, and I don't want that.
Yeah.
That would have been a mistake.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Of course, you're probably way wiser than me. I probably sound like a dummy saying, I think you're right. Let me tell you about it, Donna. I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a good decision. It was fine. You know, it is what it is. We signed the papers. We knew it was a possibility, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, it's just a weird world, too, to live in and rodeo in. But, I mean, have you gone very hard so far this year?
Yeah, I've gone. I'm not going to Florida. I'm not going on that trip. I felt like that was a long way to go by myself, you know, with the fuel and the things that we're seeing in fuel and stuff nowadays. I'm going to wait and see. Looks like some things are opening up. So yeah. I'm going to hope that it goes well where I go.
You've been in this game for quite some time, right? What has it been like kind of watching the evolution, like from when you started out and kind of what it's turned into? I mean, I don't know the exact time where you got in, and you by no means have to answer that. Yeah. But, I mean, what has it been like watching? We're totally changing gears here, I know, but I don't want to hark on the whole thing.
It's been a huge evolution. Back in the 70s, go ahead, I don't care. We all know how old I am. back in the 70s, I was working for Billy Perrin and Dale Urey. Those were the two top guys, you know. Billy Perrin's daughter, Jackie Joe, won the world in 1977, and I was working for him shortly after that. And we hand-rode everything. We didn't worry about the back end. We worried about the front end, and we got their mouths sore, and we made them listen, and we tied their heads around, and, you know, we didn't breed. We just bought stuff at the sale barn that we thought looked cool, and off we went with them. And tough, you know, they had to be tough son of guns because we didn't use vets and we didn't use whatever. We just used grit and try. So fast forward to now, oh my gosh, you know, you have the internet, you have people going to clinics, you have people understanding veterinary medicine and breeding for this, for an individual event, changed dramatically. So big changes. And you can see it, like, at the American semis. My gosh, the quality of the horses. When you see somebody run a 13.6 at the Coliseum, and you're like, oh, that was nice. Yeah, that was a nice run.
Yeah.
And then here comes the 4, and you're like, oh, that was a good run. You
know? Right.
When a 13.6 makes you go, oh, that was a nice run.
Yeah, it's the evolution of the horse itself and the breeding specifically for the sport. And, I mean, it's nowhere more prevalent than barrels, obviously. I mean, the amount of, I don't know if you want to call it science, but the amount of thought that goes into these stallions and these mares and building these monsters from the ground up to compete. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And how do you pick a stallion? You have this wonderful mare, and then you have this entire world of stallions. How in the world do you go, he's the one?
I mean, people are using the Invitational fraternities now. I mean, that's how people are picking them now. But yeah, I mean, what if you just want a rodeo and you don't care about Pink Buckle, Ruby Buckle, Royal Crown, any of that stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about that all the time, but what? How do you pick?
Well, for me, you know, if you're asking me directly.
I am asking you, yeah.
I don't even care to look at the papers.
Really?
I want to look at the horse first.
Really?
And I want to look at his back and his legs and his shoulder and his eye and his hip and, you know, ride him a second and then. Sometimes they can tell you I'm gritty or no, I'm totally compliant. I don't want to do anything you hate I'm doing nothing you want me to do. And then I want to look at the papers.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of know what doesn't fit me, but I want to look at all that stuff long before papers as far as a rodeo horse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and do you think people are make a mistake the way they purchase horses nowadays? I mean, a lot of them are sight unseen. They're going strictly off bloodline, siblings, sires, grandsires, things like that. Do you think that that's maybe a mistake?
Oh, I think you roll the dice a lot of times, but for me, it wouldn't fit for me.
Yeah.
You know, old school me would say, no, I've got to see how their knees set above their ankles and how their shoulder ties in and how their elbows go. And, you know, for me, you know, after all these years, there's concrete stuff that I have to have.
Really?
Whether the papers are good or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It muddies the waters like the other way because maybe there's a lot of, and we've been talking about this a lot. I feel like I'm repeating myself just based on the people who've been on the show the last few days, but there's probably a lot of untapped talent out there, right? Because just because of the way that the industry's circling.
Well, and the marketing, you know, everybody is a master at marketing. Well, you know, marketing's wonderful, even in horse equipment. But if it's not usable, you know, there's some bloodlines that don't suit me.
Yeah.
But I will say I definitely will go with what they look like and their mind and how they accept you and how they accept you on their back first, long before papers.
Yeah. What bloodlines in specific? I'd be really curious to know that, actually.
For what I don't like?
For what you don't like.
Oh, everybody, I don't want to do it. Somebody be mad at me.
Everybody always talks about what they do like. What do you not like? Nobody could be mad. It's your personal opinion. Somebody else will definitely like them just because you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I would never want to influence anybody that likes them, and I don't mean a thing by it because everybody's different. My style doesn't match everybody's style.
Right.
And I'm old school, and I'm slow trainer. So the Mr. Jess Perrys don't fit my program. They're fractious and pushy toward me. I've ridden only three of them, so I don't have a big grandeur of a history of that, but they don't fit me.
Yeah.
And then back in the old days, Go Mangoes.
Yeah.
They would just grit up and forget it. You know, if you were mad at them, they were mad at you, and they would fight back till you lost. So, you know, I want one that's a little more willing.
Yeah. Well, what do you like?
Oh, well, obviously, the Valiant Hero and Rare High has been great for me, but I primarily have liked a cow race bred.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do think, as you talked about evolution, you kind of need a lot of run.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, in this climate, you're fixing to get outrun. I was talking with Dale Urey when Dash to Fame first came on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what do you think, Dale? What do you think? You know, those horses are, you know, they're this or that. They're quirky, and we all know that. And he said, well, I don't know if you've ever talked to Dale Urey, but he said, he's real twangy. He said, now, Don, okay, if you're not riding one, you're going to get outrun by one.
That's it. I mean, there's enough of them, and it's true.
It's a fact, yeah. So he was right.
Most people are pro Dash to Fame, but, I mean, you just cannot write the bloodline off, right? There's too many proven
good
horses out there.
For sure. For sure. But now, for me, I think I would like them on back a little bit because of the quirkiness. But, you know, if I started them from scratch, maybe they were a broke gelding, for instance, I think I could deal with quirkiness.
Really?
But if they came with quirky and I had to adapt, not sure I would like that.
Yeah. You feel like you just, at this point in your career, because, I mean, you've been doing it for so long, you've ridden so many different horses, that's just the nature of choosing this as a lifelong career, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to go through a pretty large amount of horses and the amount of time that you do it as a job. But do you like to get young horses? Do you want something that's finished now?
I mean, I definitely can't ride a finished horse. No. I much prefer a 4 to 6 year old broke gelding that's not been started in the barrels.
Really?
I want him in the pasture, wouldn't mind a working cow, you know, start or a reiner start. Because I can, if you see me ride very much, I can untrain one pretty easy. But I would prefer them not start on the barrels, 4 to 6 year old. And I'm a gelding girl. I don't have the patience for the mare's ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, I like a dumb gelding that goes, okie dokie, we can do this, you know. So that works for me pretty good.
That's really interesting because I mean, it's almost counterintuitive what most everybody else does, right?
Yes.
You know, it's start them two, get them in a juvenile, 3, 4, 5, and then by the time they're 6, 7, 8 years old, they've been through so many different competitions that, you know, it's like a full-blown ready-to-go rodeo horse almost.
Well, yeah, like, you know, and I'll take one that's 4 to 6, and ideally he's 4 and already broke and kind of in the bridle, and I'll start him, I'll do pasture stuff, I'll do a round of, you know, I'll pick a poop pile out, set him up for a turn and go around it. Or I might go out there and turn some trees. I've got a place out at my pasture that I call the Serengeti where the cows have eaten the trees up. So they just have this little stem of trees.
Looks like a desert.
Yes. And I can go and turn those trees. Well, you have to do that right as a jockey or you're going to tear your knees up. And then secondly, they learn to understand a weight, left tree, right tree, whatever. And when you finally get to the arena, I'll set up a whole bunch of barrels out there, and we'll do all rights, all lefts, or we might do right, left, or whatever. And the whole time they understand to wait on you. So by the time, and then you go to jackpots and stuff and expose them to the kids and the wagons and the toys and the silly ones that come running at you 110 miles an hour on the warm-up, you know, scare you to death, you know. And then by the time you get to the rodeo, they pretty much go, okay, that's a little scary, but I'm kind of on you. What do we need?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think one of the things that people like about you, they also liked about, like, say, Mary Berger, for instance, is that you're doing all this at, you know, for so long and at the age that you are, and you're competing at the highest possible level. And I think it inspires a lot of people. And it seems like you gained a lot of fandom over, you know, this past NFR and all that. But I mean, what is the exact reason that makes you want to keep on pushing and hitting the rodeo trail the way you are? I mean, it's just really inspiring to see for anybody who, you know, you don't even have to be into barrel racing or whatever. I mean, I'm certainly not a barrel racer. I just happen to come from a family of them, but,
yes, you do.
Yes, I do. But, it can translate into anything, right? Like, you can look at someone like you and be like, wow, that's super inspirational for anything else, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be that it's because you're a barrel racer, but why is it exactly that you continue to want to push so hard and do this?
Well, I've worked at it my whole life. Yeah. And, honestly, I never wanted to do anything else.
Yeah.
Never. You know, and the fact that you get on one and you're encouraged by his mentality and that he likes to do it and the drive to do it, you want to see him succeed. Even when I sold horses, because when I was young, John and I had National Saddlery for 30 years, and I would ride colts and sell them. But I wouldn't just sell them to just anybody. I wanted to place them where they would be happy and do their job and
thrive,
feel good about the horse itself, you know. And that's how I feel when I get on one. He likes this, and we're going to do this, and he will enjoy his life.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe for them and for me. And I really, honestly, and this is going to sound really hokey, but it's not about me.
Right.
It's about the horse. And it's about, you know, as I've gone through this journey, I feel like there's been a lot of stuff not about me in this. It's been very important that people can see that, like you said, you know, outside of the barrel deal, you can get older if you still want to do it. Why not? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to, you should, right?
Yeah.
It just so happens this is one of those things where if you can keep yourself together and have the right horses, I think you can do it. I mean, you've certainly proved that, and people like Mary have proved that. I mean, but it's interesting, right? Because the way the world is right now, social media, you name it, I mean, it really becomes about the person. And when people are willing to give, and a lot of people do that, I mean, Haley's great about that. My sister's great about that. A lot of the girls are great about giving the horse the credit. But I think what you just said, I mean, it is not about you or about anybody. It's kind of about the legacy of what you're doing, maybe.
Yeah, the legacy. Yeah, that's a good point. The legacy of the whole rodeo thing. You know, John and I have been married 40 years, and there were so many wonderful people came in and out of National Saddlery. And we were in Oklahoma City, and the course of finals were there all these years until our son was born. We took him to the last NFR there, you know, and those wonderful people that came in, the Buck Weatherfords, the Sonny Oliphants, the Sean Burchettes, the Lane Frost, you know, all those guys, you know, it was so important. The whole thing is important. The whole history is important, and the need to continue, you know, it's important.
It is important. Yeah. And I think if you take away the worldly stuff, I mean, we're like in the prime of rodeo. It seems like it's grown so much, even though there's so much around its throat trying to choke it out and keep it from growing. It just is. And it's really fun to see that. I mean, with all the different, you've got the American, you've got the NFR is as popular as ever. And you can thank Cowboy Channel for a lot of this.
Oh, so much. So much.
They're an amazing organization.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, you know, and one of the things I really love about the rodeo situation is we're a family. And your kids can come, and your kids can go to junior rodeos, and they understand that they have to get up and feed, and they have to water, and they have to ride, and they have to help the other guy. You know, that we lack a lot of that in a lot of other athletics.
Just a lot of other things, right? In life, people get so stuck in their way of doing things, and that's just not how it works, right? There's a certain path that if even just raising animals, maybe you don't rodeo, but I mean, you got to take care of them, and you got to take care of them right, or your cows aren't going to produce, or whatever it is.
And you care about them. It's not just about money.
No. I mean, especially high level horses. I mean, if you're a true horseman, you connect with a horse almost more than you can connect with a person. They don't talk, they don't speak, but there's just something special about a good horse.
It's a big deal.
And just like crappy people, there's also crappy horses that you don't connect with. But
yeah, I'm not connecting with that guy.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. I think this, you're going to send you home.
Yeah, we're done. This is it.
But you're right. Yeah, I really like the way that you put it because that is true. And that's something that I say a lot. And it does sound kind of corny when you say it out loud for people to hear, but it is true.
Yeah, yeah. It's 100% true. Yeah. And it's important that, you know, the responsibility factor and, you know, teaching a kid to be a good kid. And then they become a good adult.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's one thing that we don't ever have a shortage of in our industry that it seems like we have a shortage of in the world is just quality people.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody. I mean, there's bad people everywhere, but this is no different everywhere. But, I mean, there's good people who run 7-Elevens and there's really bad ones who run 7-Elevens. But by and large, I mean, you don't meet a lot of people that I'm like, man, I would spend time with that person or I wouldn't mind doing something with that guy or gal because you can just tell their quality.
Good people. Yeah. A lot of good people in the rodeo deal. You know, and I often say, well, you know, sometimes we fuss at each other. We're not happy about so-and-so, what he said, what he did, or whatever. But I guarantee you, chips are down, the whole crew will come help you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, they'd come and they'd send their neighbor or they'd find the guy that lived over there to help you change your tire, whatever, you know. It's a good climate.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to teach your children and teach people to be good to each other.
Yeah, it is. If you have kids, it's far better to raise them in that environment. I mean, you guys obviously raise children in it, and I've got young, tiny ones, but... They don't want to help yet, but they will.
Our daughter is a rodeo girl and a horse trainer, and she's really good at what she does. And our son had no interest, and it's fine.
What'd he end up doing?
He works at a hospital. He's the head dude that takes care of everything. If they're in the middle of a surgery and the lights go out, he can go in there and scrub up and fix it and whatever. But I guarantee you, he's at our house every weekend, helping with cows and doing whatever. You know, he just didn't have the competitive edge, but...
Just wasn't interested at
all. Yeah, he loved to help us to do whatever. He'd turn out cattle for me. I roped a lot and turn out cattle for John. And it just wasn't his thing. So, but he was a car guy. He could do anything with a car. He's the guy that you give the bag of Q-tips and some string to, and he can go fix your tractor. You know, he's that guy. He's MacGyver.
You need that guy, right?
Yeah, we do. We use him too.
Yeah, because most of the people are like, man, it's like you could give me everything in a perfect color manual, and I'm not going to be able to fix that tractor.
Yeah, that would be me.
Yep, not mechanical at all.
I get Marshall. I call Marshall.
There you go. Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be an interesting year. I mean, is your goal to make the NFR this year?
I'd like to.
Yeah.
I'd like to. I don't know how many years I can hit the road and stay out there by myself like I do. I've loved it, and I've met so many cool people. But it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
How come you go by yourself?
Well, you know, at my age, when I first started going again at this level, I didn't know anybody. And everybody I knew that I met, I was 30 years older than them. I had nothing in common with them. So, there's a lot of great people out there. But me and Rosie the rodeo dog, we just hop in and away we go. So,
Yeah. What was the first year you got back into it?
I actually wasn't. Well, I roped a lot. Yeah. I, here's the funny story. I had trained a nice young horse. And brought him up, been in the BFA, and man, he was coming on. He was just peaking and really making some runs. And my first run at the BFA in the Futurity, he smokes barrel one, and he goes to barrel two and hits it so bad. I think they had to replace the barrel. It was terrible. I was so disappointed. And John and I had a guy working for us, and he come running in the alley, and he was like, "What the heck? What'd you do that for?" And I was like, looking at him like, oh, for gosh sakes, I did not do that. I hate barrel racing. And I left and went to the trailer, turned out my second run, and I didn't run for 10 years. I just roped.
Really?
That's the truth. And I went to 9 women's finals. I won the Pioneer Award in 2006, which is just somebody that contributed to the women in rodeo.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really cool deal. And, somebody came and they wanted some help with their barrel horse. And of course I did the big eye roll, but I'll help you. And after all that time and being off barrel horses and after Billy Perrin helping me and teaching me all this stuff, and I thought, you know, this really is kind of fun, and I'm going to go back at it and just do it fun. And then the kids grew up and moved on, and Valor came into my life, you know, all that long old story. And shoot, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
And honestly, I did not buy my car again until I was 59 years old. I'm 63 now, so yeah.
That's pretty amazing if you say it like that. But, yeah. But tell the story about the horse, because maybe a lot of people listening don't know that. You might assume they do, but...
About Juice getting hurt and all that?
Well, Valor getting Valor.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, Juice, my kids had grown, and I decided, okay, I'm going to get one more and train it just for me. I'm not going to train it for the public, because there's things I put in my horses that most people don't need or don't want.
Sure.
And so we looked. I looked at 21 head, and I finally found Juice. And I bought him, and he was a reiner, a reject reiner, and half cow, half race. And boy, he came on. Nice horse. Really nice horse. And then somewhere in the interim of running him, I bought my card and went back, and he was going good. And he had a terrible accident at Springfield, Missouri. Somebody had tied a horse to a loose panel.
Oh, God.
And it was pouring down rain, and it was slack, and we all went in this little sheep showing area. And I went in, I was putting my splint boots on him, and we hear the dreaded whoa, whoa, whoa. And sure enough, here goes this horse tearing around this little bitty tiny pen, and all of us bulldoggers and barrel racers are in there running around. People were screaming. I tried to get out the gate I was by, and it was locked. And I just tossed the reins over Juice's neck and was going to turn and go away and let him get out. And horses were loose and running in there. Well, they all hit Juice from behind, and he jumped over me and got in the bleachers and nearly cut his leg off. And those horses all hit me and stuffed me in the fence and broke a bunch of ribs. And, I mean, it was a disaster. And Juice was in a pen for about 8 months. And somewhere in the interim, I had bought Valor and was just bringing him along. And he got thrown to the wolves. And I think I went to Elk City. I was entered, so I took Valor because that's what I had. And I think we were second there that year. So.
Wow.
So then Katie barred the door. I mean, I just thought, well, he's what I've got. Let's enter and let's go. So
just rose to the occasion is what
he did.
He
just did, but I had brought him along real slow and, you know, blah, 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 like I normally do.
You're hauling both of them?
Yeah, just bringing him, riding him the rodeos and riding him in the arena and tying him to the gate, but the trailer rather, and... you know, he just saw sights like that. And we went to Waco to a D&G barrel race. And I introduced him, Valor. And that was in March of 2017. And I went and looked to the draw. And I was like, oh, for gosh sakes. Everybody who's anybody that's ever been anybody is on this list. I better get high behind and give it a good try. Well, Valor went in and won all three rounds.
Yeah.
All three nights. And I was like, okay. I kind of think I have something.
Okay, this horse is legit.
Yeah. And then Juice got hurt the following week. So then here comes Valor.
So you knew. So at that point, like, obviously that's very tragic, right?
Yeah.
You see something like a horse jump into the bleachers, the chances of him even making it out of there without a broken leg is amazing in itself.
Yeah, he almost cut it. His whole extensor tendon and almost lost it. It was awful.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so you already knew you could rely on that other horse, though.
Well, I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know mentally. You know physically if they can make runs and outrun horses. But you don't know mentally if they can deal with the music and the crowd and the whatever and the hauling and the trailer. And, you know, it takes every puzzle piece, as your sister well knows.
Oh, yeah.
Have the big disaster and the comebacks. And mentally they have to be together, and as well as physically.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the hard parts right now is you're right, so many pieces go into that puzzle, and finding another puzzle to build up is, like, the hardest thing in the world right now, it seems like.
Yeah, because even if you have talent, you may not have soundness.
Yep.
Even if you have talent, soundness, and mental game, you have that disaster on the road like Ivy had.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, all it takes is one
mess up.
But that's not anything but just some random... Yeah. Vet hired to work at the rodeo.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. It's difficult. You know, and that's where you have to tell everybody, you're okay. You're okay. Things happen. Don't let the highs get too high. Don't let the lows get too low. Stuff happens. You deal with it.
Absolutely.
Calvary's not coming. Do what you can. Get it okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know that. You just went through that.
Yeah.
You went through it a few times. I mean, So if you you come out on the other side and you're able to continue to go, I mean, it's just that's why we like do this whole thing, because we want to hear people say that, because you never know who you might inspire on the other side. You might be like, oh, that looks too hard, because you could look at, I mean, barrel racing almost more than anything right now, and it seems like an impossible task maybe to someone who doesn't have all the resources to figure it out, or the luck to get a horse like Valor or Sister or Jail, you name a barrel horse, or a rope horse for that matter, some of the greats, and it does rodeo. Maybe back in the very beginning when you were introduced to it, didn't seem like the uphill battle. Maybe it feels like now, right?
Yeah, it's not. It was not. I mean, you had to be double tough, and you had to sleep in the back of the pickup. And we didn't have, you know, LQs in our trailers. We actually had a canvas that we rolled up and buckled with a leather strap.
Yeah.
With a pillow, and we would unroll it and sleep there, you know. And if it was raining, then you'd sleep in the trailer.
Yeah.
Where the horses rode. So, yeah, we've come quite a long way from that. But, and there's so many cool barrel races you could go to, the Pink and Ruby Buckle and the way less than that, just down home things. You know, you just bail in and go.
Yeah.
You know, go, do it.
Is that what you think you would tell people, is don't get too worried about logistics, like having enough money to buy a 6-figure horse and those things, just go.
So what? You know, the young lady, that Gracie Jones that just ran the American with all her challenges, she was like, well, nobody's going to stop me. And what if it doesn't go good? So what? You know, and then Casey Bettis, you know, when she first started out, it was a pickup and a 2-horse. Who cares? And that was recent.
Yeah.
You know, she found some resources, got some help. You know, I'm sure Tammy Fisher helped her a lot. And, you know, go and learn. Go and figure it out for you.
Yeah. You just got to have the balls to do it, right?
Do it. Bail in and do it. And, you know, if you love it, it'll continue. And you still have to have luck. You still have to have all the puzzle pieces. Learn from it.
Even if you're 59, the first time you pull your card in 10 years.
That's right.
Freaking go.
Just load up, baby. Get in that truck.
I mean, that was kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, is because I think you... I didn't know a lot about you other than just what I see, because I don't think we'd ever met, but seeing like just the way you handled that whole thing, I was like, okay, we got to get her, Riley, we got to get her in here, and we just got to talk to her and see what she can say. Because I just feel like if you say things like what you say, you inspire. And when I say what you say, I mean you specifically say, you can just inspire so many people, and got so many young people listen to this.
It's important.
I think it's important to say those things.
I do too. It's just you know, I think I keep telling John, you know, this is not about me. There's something that's being said here that needs to be said, and it does. It needs to be said. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Get in the truck.
Yep.
Give it a try.
Do it.
Yeah.
All right. You heard her. Guys, you do it. Well, we'll let you get on and get back to doing it. I'm glad you came in here and you guys waited on me.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was so not punctual.
Traffic was lovely.
It was bad. Yeah, I was like, you know, it usually takes me not all that long to shoot down 35 and get here. I was wrong today.
Yeah.
Way wrong. It I don't know busy. What's going on.
Yeah, they had several wrecks. We were coming across from Millsap, so yeah.
I don't know. It was bad. Normally it's bad, but not like where you don't move for 15 to 20 minutes bad.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll let you guys get on with your evening. Get back to drinking those Pepsis over there.
Yeah, thanks.
This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Riley Chone. Our theme song is by Shay Ashshire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you guys next time.